This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth with Christopher John O'Shea. Christopher?
Yes, sir. Andrew, another Wednesday, and here we are.
Here we are. That is true. And we're going to have a guest, but we're going to have to pause for a little while. Not pause in the sense of Anita pausing, but we're going to just have to talk for a second or two because he had a couple minutes. He's got to get back to his desk or whatever, do the interview.
We can do that.
So, tonight we're going to talk about a unique topic. What is it like to be a trader on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange? So we're going to find out more about that, but he also has a neat macroeconomic idea that he's pounding the table on, and I think it's a concept worth understanding the implications of and the opportunity.
Sure, which we like because it's not something that he started and then is changing his mind on. He's been saying this for a while, and this is a long-term type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it could happen anytime, but he's going to stay with it.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, we'll see, and we'll talk more about that. But for right now, we just want to do a Drew's View, and I don't have one, but I'm sure I can think of one in a minute or two, you know?
Sure. So, well, the markets are worldwide there's something to talk about.
Yeah.
You know?
But you know what? I actually just thought of the one I have written down at my office as a Drew's View, and it's the scariest thing when you hear this, it should make you tremble, okay? And it's when it's about taxes.
So you tell them and you say it, see if I actually tremble.
It's about somebody helping you to do your tax return. You know, so you hire a tax preparer.
Sure.
Or you have an accountant or whatever for your business. And one of their badges of honor as to why you should respect them as your tax preparer is they say the dreaded words, "I used to work for the IRS." Every time I have heard an accountant or a client tell me, well, that my accountant used to work for the IRS, I've always, my eyes get big and I think, oh my, what am I going to find on this tax return, you know? Because, you know, why would you give up your IRS government job if you were, you know, to go out and be an IRS agent? And if you're really good, you're not going to tell anyone. You're not going to tell anyone. You're just going to say, I'm a CPA. I got lots of experience, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I'm good at this, you know. But the ones that say, I know this stuff because I once worked for the IRS. And it's like, well, why'd you give up that job, you know, man? If you're really good, you should have moved up the ranks into the appeal process or to the tax courts or whatever, you know. If you left and went on your own, that's a scary thing. Anyway, we got our guest on. Tell everybody who our guest is, and then we'll bring him on the line with us.
Sure, I will. So, again, very interesting guest. And he has been a trader on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange for 20 years. He considers his scope to be global macro, so he's looking at the big picture. He trades markets all over the world. Lately, though, he's been focusing his attention on the Japanese debt market. So that's the point that Drew was talking about. He'll be talking about that at some length. To his opinion, there's a significant chance the Japanese will have a debt crisis and very possibly lose control of their currency, the yen, in the current years. And he says he maintains a fund that seeks to profit from what he thinks is the coming pressure on the Japanese government bond market. So without further ado, we have Trey on the line. Trey, it's Trey Canepa, correct?
You got it. You do pronounce the K just like Canepa, Texas. There's a town in South Texas where I'm from.
Okay. Well, Trey, let's before we get into some of your macro ideas, we really have about two or three minutes until we actually have to take our first pause. But
for a commercial,
tell us what's it like to be a trader on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and what do you trade?
Well, let's also, this requires a little bit of an update.
Okay.
I moved my hedge fund to Dallas in January, and it may have been the greatest time trade ever because now the pits in Chicago are closed.
Yeah.
They closed on January, right at the beginning of July.
Oh.
Yeah, July 6th, I believe. They closed all the futures pits. So I'll never forget, I was in Florida giving a speech about Japan, and I get a call from Bloomberg, then I get a call from Reuters, I get a call from somebody else, and I was busy. And the calls keep coming, and I'm like, my God, is the world on fire? Why is everybody calling me? And I finally picked up the phone. They said, Trey, we would like your comments about the Merck. I said, in regards to what? And they said, well, they announced they're closing the pits. And I was like, oh, my goodness. So clearly, you know, I tried to take credit. Oh, I moved my hedge fund 5 months in advance of that announcement, you know, because I had an inkling it was coming.
Right.
That would be a complete fabrication. It's not true.
You're that good an investor.
You know, I'll throw the funniest story out there. I'm 5'9", ran long distance track when I am in Baylor, and I was voted to the pit committee of the live cattle pit down on the floor of the Merck. I'm 5'9", I weigh 155 on my best day, and the job of the pit committee is if a fight breaks out, you jump in first and try to separate them. I'm like, I am woefully unqualified for that job. It makes no sense. You know? But, I can also tell you a story. One day I got stabbed in the pit. Totally by accident. A guy, you know, you're down there, you're pushing and shoving and trading and you're doing your thing. And this guy said sold, and his pen stuck right between my scapula and one of my ribs in the back, and it stuck right in my back.
Ow.
Not cool at all.
Ow.
Yeah. So I went to work and got shanked. That's a lot of fun, you know?
Well, Trey, you're going to have to hold on for us because we do have to let our listeners know what's happening with traffic out there, and we're going to be right back. We're going to get into some of your macro ideas. You're
no
obviously
problem.
A great trader, so we want to know. Let's go to who's doing traffic, Nita? I'm lost without news. Go ahead.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Trey Canepa, and he is a former trader on the Chicago Mercantile because they closed it two weeks ago. But he was so smart, he had moved out a year before. And he took his hedge fund and went to Dallas. And now you're mainly a macro dealer and, you know, a macro trader. And to explain to us what you mean by a macro trader.
Well, I have the general philosophy, or maybe the hypothesis is the right word, that bond markets all over the world are grossly overinflated. You have to go no further than talk to the savers that are in your audience.
No.
They have money deposited in banks and treasuries, and they're getting no yield whatsoever.
No,
and that's throughout the entire world.
We agree with that wholeheartedly because, you know, like I was with a client the other day and we were looking at performance, and I said, you know, in our bond portfolio, every year until the last 2 years or so, we would always make 3, 4, 5, 6% just in the interest, let alone maybe a tad of appreciation. Nowadays, you cannot make money in the bond market unless you just happen to be lucky in the right bonds.
How about this one? The yield on a 10-year bond in Japan is 0.40. I wouldn't lend the Japanese government money at 10% for 4 years, much less 0.4%. For 10 years.
Yeah, well,
that
they were
absolute nonsense.
They were paying the Swiss to hold their money for 10 years. Now, the Swiss, I can understand that to some degree, but that's still crazy.
Because you get to hold their currency out of it. But the whole origin of all this is because of debt.
Right.
Oddly, the debt markets are too high because there's too much debt. I realize that sounds counterintuitive.
Yep.
But it is true, and it is because the central banks around the world and governments are trapped, and we have been sold this idiotic economic thesis that governments have got to go out and increase government spending and finance that spending by additional borrowing. And so guess what? All these governments are leveraged to the hilt. Here's a couple of numbers that'll just blow you away in Japan. Japan's budget, if you just look at their financial statement, income on one side and expenses on the other. Do you realize that Japan, the Japanese government, spends twice what it makes in tax revenue? That's like you make $50,000 a year, but you spend $100. And
yep.
If you look at their expenses, you've got $25,000 goes to just interest on their debt. And how can you pay down debt if you have a fiscal deficit where you're spending twice what you make? And yet the yields on their bonds are as low as anywhere in the world, implying that, oh, well, those bonds must be the safest. That is absolute nonsense. What? And these governments are going to continue because guess what? Look at what's happening in Greece. Can you cut spending and get reelected as a politician?
Right.
Never.
Right.
Who's going to vote? I mean, the Greek vote cracked me up. We're going to get together and vote to not cut our pensions. Hey, we have an aging population in the United States. What do you think is going to happen here when we start talking about Social Security cuts because we can't afford them? Oh, I can only imagine the riots in the street. Suddenly everybody's going to speak Greek, right?
Right.
So all this is due to spending, and it's due to debt finance spending. And that's why I've tried to identify what I think are the weakest ones. So for me, it's Japan. This might be the most obvious trade in the history of finance. And how it's going to manifest itself is it's going to start out in the currency. So oftentimes I go to these investment conferences and sit around at these round tables and all this stuff. And finally, I'm a trader. I always raise my hand at the table and I say, guys, stop building the watch and tell me what time it is. Tell me what I need to do. If you think I can find profit from this, what do I do? So here's that for your listeners right now. There are many ways that you can short the yen. I know that sounds like something kind of out there, kind of weird, but there are ETFs for this. There are a variety of Forex products you can do this. You can, if you believe my thesis that Japanese government debt is way too high, and the only answer is the Bank of Japan is going to print yen till they're blue in the face, until they cause a crisis, then figure out a way to get short the yen. That's a start right there. There's an actionable idea for your listeners.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you. That is absolutely true. But one thing we do have to remember, I think it was John Maynard Keynes who said, you know, what was the line of Keynes?
He said a lot of good things.
Yeah, but he said the one somebody said the concept that, you know, what was the word I'm looking for?
The market can stay irrational longer than you can stay liquid.
So, and yep. I can stay solvent. There you go. That's the one I'm
exactly.
thinking about, Trey.
Yep.
Market can stay irrational longer than I can stay solvent. So, you know, yep. Our listeners have to remember that you and I would both agree on this trade for the last 4 or 5 years. And
yep,
yet
it's been steadily declining.
Yeah, the yen has started to steadily decline, in the last few years. So how bad
money's going to be made when their debt market rolls over. Their debt market rolls over, that's where you can get mountains of leverage through options, this, that, and the other. That's why I started the hedge fund that I have. It is to try to capitalize on that. Simple as that.
Now, when you say the bond market will roll over, you're meaning that the yield on the 10-year will go from 0.4 to 1 to 1.5 to 2 or whatever, right?
Right, and it will be caused by the currency weakness. And here's why. A bond is an IOU. I give the government currency. They give me a security that says they're going to pay me back that currency, right?
Right.
So if I see the currency that they're going to pay me back in is getting its rear end kicked, why would I hold a security that's going to pay me back that currency 10 years from now? No way. So they're going to start selling. Then what's going to happen is, what is the natural policy response by a central bank when the bonds come under pressure? Oh, goodness, we better buy some more. Thus exacerbating the yen weakness. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to print more yen, they're going to buy more bonds, and that's when you're going to see the yen have massive moves in the overnight sessions. You're going to see the yen literally drop 10 and 15% per night at that point, because guess what? In a fiat currency, in a bond market, and in a banking system, there is one thing that matters, and that's it. And that one thing is confidence. If that confidence gets fractured, it is all over, because the money's not there, and the ability to pay those debts back is simply not there. And that day is coming.
Yeah. So, you know, the fascinating thing about Japan is here's Abe saying, we are going to create inflation. We are going to create inflation. And yet, if he creates inflation like he says he's going to, then it's irrational to yield to own a bond for 10 years. It's only yielding 0.4%. So it just.
In the book that I'm currently writing, there will be a chapter called Be Careful What You Wish For. And that is can they get, does anybody realize, by the way, whoever inflation hired to be their PR person is doing a fabulous job. We are being sold this nonsense that inflation is a good thing. GDP growth is a good thing. That's a good thing. Inflation in and of itself is the side effect of central bank activity. Now, there are ways to take advantage of inflation. Argentina is a great place to go down. You can get goods and services down there for just almost nothing. Why? Because their currency has been drastically overprinted, and they've got nasty inflation, and there you go. So if you bring a currency that's reasonably stable, you can be the king in Argentina. I know, because I've done it. Not actually royalty. You get to feel like a king. You know? So, but this idea that they should be targeting inflation, There is nothing further from the truth. If we don't have any growth, then why in the world would I want to make the price of everything that I'm buying going up?
Now,
that doesn't sound very rational to me.
Now, I only have a minute till I got to go to my next traffic break, but one of the reasons they say Japan can do this is because all their debt is either owned by their central bank or by their own citizens, and that's why it doesn't matter. That's the theory they tell us.
That's the most common misconception. That is a weakness and not a strength. Everybody is sitting on the same side of the boat there. That's it. It's a weakness. It's not a strength. And I'll explain why after, I guess we hear about the traffic.
Well, we're going to hear about the traffic in about 30 seconds. You know, I got these hard breaks I got to take, you know. If you want to tell another joke for 20 seconds, you can feel free to do that. Where are you in Texas right now? Are you in Waco?
I'm in Dallas, Texas. Great guess on the Waco. I was in Waco just the other day. I went to Baylor University and ran track there, and that's why my trading symbol was Waco. I also went to TCU, and I went to MIT in Boston, but my symbol couldn't be MIT because that's actually a type of securities order. It's called a market if touched order. So I ended up choosing Waco, and since I became a member of the exchange, everybody, including on national TV, refers to me as Wacko. Good thinking, huh?
All right, Trey, you got to hold on. We're going to get that traffic report now. We're going to be back to you in about 4 minutes. Hold on there. Go ahead.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we want to get right back to our guest, Trey Canepa, and we're talking about some of the macro ideas he has, and we're talking about Japan and their debt and the problems that that could eventually cause and so forth. And real quick, Trey, you want to just give us why it's a weakness that their citizens and their central bank own their debt?
The reason it's a weakness is because they're the only buyers of that debt. There isn't like there's some international market that's just desperate to buy these bonds yielding 0.4%. So whenever you get that tide turn and you get that market starting to shift to the other side of the boat, there's no one there. Now, some people say, well, you know, wouldn't we bail them out, or isn't there the IMF?
You can't.
AIG was too big to fail. Japan is too big to save. There is nobody that can write a check. Never mind that the two largest contributors to the IMF are the United States and Japan. So how in the world can we possibly write a check for 12 some odd trillion dollars? It's just not reasonable. So the other thing is what's our incentive to save the savers of Japan? That's who's going to lose out on this.
Right. So let me ask you this question. One of the things that I've always said about Japan is that if they would allow their country to be more dynamic, like the United States, if they would allow private equity guys to come in and break these companies up and get them to be more dynamic, that stock market would go literally way back over the 40,000 that it hit in 1990. You're starting to hear Abe say something about real reform in this regard. I doubt seriously it's going to be anything like I'm dreaming about, but what do you think of that? What do you think?
I don't think that you have quite a good handle on just how corrupt the Japanese business environment is. So the notion that you're going to get all these big changes and all these big regulations drop and all this big massive reform.
Well, they don't call it corruption. They call it management and unions. They all work together as a little team. So
right,
supposedly then, well, they say.
Right, and then they do accounting fraud for 7 years that goes undetected.
You're talking about Toshiba.
You got it. You got it. So I just don't see. Okay, let's back up a second. There are only two ways to increase GDP. There's only two. One is to increase productivity. The other is to increase population. Japan's population peaked 5 years ago. By 2030, you will have one working age person for every three retired people. Chew on that.
Right. Now,
so
they are.
That doesn't sound like a population that's going up.
He does say that he wants to allow immigration, but who's going to want to immigrate to Japan when they don't like immigrants?
Right. No, the word you're looking for is racism. No. They're just, they have a strong nationalist environment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, I can't imagine that they're just going to be eager to open up the immigration to the Koreans or the Chinese or anybody else. It's just, I just don't see that happening. That society's not built like that.
So how bad, if Japan blows up and you get this yen collapse and so forth that you're talking about and the debt and you know, all these kind of things, what does the repercussions to the rest of the world?
Our bond market, the yield in the 10-year treasury goes to 0.2%. We will be the big hole that everybody goes and stuffs money into. But let's try to remember something here.
Would we go to 0.2% and the U.S. dollar would go to, you know, 800, you know, or 800 yen to the dollar? Is that what you're saying?
My forecast for the yen is somewhere between 400 and 800 yen to the dollar. That's where I think we'll be within a matter of 3 or 4 years once that confidence gets cracked. But that, the average citizen in the U.S. doesn't care unless he has a short position in the yen. But here's, there's a larger story at play here. And the larger story is that shouldn't we be learning from that horrible policy that you cannot borrow and spend your way into prosperity?
Or quantitative ease.
We're not learning. I'm from Texas, so everything goes football metaphor. We have got their playbook, and we are following it. And guess what? Their big crack started when they had a real estate bubble that popped in 1990. What did they do? They lowered rates to zero. The government came in and started spending. Then they started borrowing to increase that spending. And the Japanese economy today is the same size that it was in 1992. So why is that economic philosophy of, well, we got to keep borrowing and keep increasing government spending? Well, it just plain didn't work in Japan. It has been a complete failure by every definition. And so why is it that we want to go that way? And I'll tell you why. It's because the main focus of politicians is to get reelected, and nobody gets reelected by cutting spending. Not ever. Doesn't work that way.
So what do you invest in other than shorting the yen and so forth? What do you invest in to protect yourself during this period of time?
You have got a favored asset in the United States. And that favored asset is real estate. And the reason I say that is that in the last round of QE, what two asset classes could the Fed buy? They bought U.S. Treasuries and mortgages. Well, that's odd. Why are mortgages so special? Why is the housing market? And guess what? If wages are not rising, then why is it good if housing prices go up? Would somebody explain that to me? If my wage isn't going up, I certainly don't want to pay more rent and more for my house.
Right.
So I've never quite understood that. But it is a favorite asset. And I believe gold and real estate to be very similar in the sense that there's a finiteness to it, right? But guess what? In real estate, you can rent it out and you can generate income from it. So that I like. For the listeners out there that are looking for yield, there are places to find yield. I mean, very good yields, well above market yield, but it requires work. It requires creativity. And I've been working on things for the last 6 months, coming up with fresh ideas. So the same hedge fund manager that's sitting here saying that the bond market in Japan is way too high and he thinks it's going to go down is also seeking opportunities out there for the yield investor, you know, monthly income kind of thing. That's what I've been searching for. And believe it or not, I think I've found some real opportunities out there.
So are you doing that in a public mutual fund, or are you doing that strictly in private hedge fund?
it's all in the private realm, and it's not anything that I can talk about in the public forum, just because of the way that the thing is structured. But
so,
I'm telling you that it requires creativity, it requires some work, but there are areas out there to find you.
So let me ask you this question, and we only got about a minute and a half. Is why do you believe that the commodity market is collapsing the way it's collapsing?
Well, that all started with a strong dollar, and oddly, I remember vividly. I went and gave a speech with Alan Greenspan in New Orleans back in October, and I remember walking through the trade show there. And as I'm walking through the trade show, I see oil revenue, crude oil drilling, natural gas drilling, gold this, gold mining that, gold stocks, gold this, that, and the other. And I will never forget it in a million years. I sat there and I said, you know what? What single market event would hurt every single person in this room? And I go, a strong dollar. Now, the dollar is not strong because we are doing anything just so awesome.
Right.
I mean, here the Fed is threatening to raise rates, so that is dollar supportive in the long term. I actually agree. I actually believe that when Janet Yellen leaves office, quantitative easing will be higher than when she left. That's obviously, that has to unfold after a little while, but rates are not going to go up significantly because the government can't afford to pay for it. But it starts with a strong dollar, but is it a strong dollar or is it a weaker yen and a weaker euro?
Right.
So this strong dollar story, this business with Iran, the business with Iran and having them increase production for crude oil, that could make crude oil go to 32. Now, I find this peculiar. I hear commentators talk about how this benefits the consumer, that the price of oil and the price of gas has been working lower. Wait a second. I thought inflation was good. So does that mean that Janet Yellen is wringing her hands going, oh, my gosh, oil's going down. This is terrible.
You got to hold on, Trey. We're going to have to come back and talk about this. We got to take our last traffic break. We're going to be right back. Take it away.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Trey Canepa. And we only have a little bit of time, so we might as well take advantage of every minute we've got. So, Trey, we're talking about the commodity market. And now, would you think, you know, my theory is that, you know, you're basically bankrupting commodities because everything's trading at under what it costs to produce most of these things. So you're going to be bankrupting the private companies. Mines are going to be closing. Companies are going to be going out of business. People aren't going to be willing to lend to them. Sooner or later, you get a boomerang backward on the commodity market. Yes? No? Maybe?
Sure, but I don't necessarily want to buy it because you're trying to lay out a story about how supply is going to back off. Well, these companies go out of business, they stop mining it, and then supply backs off, and that's what makes prices go back up. Where it's got to come from is it's got to come from the demand side. That's what drives commodity prices. So what are we going to do to get global growth back going? The commodity story right now is China. The world's worried about China slowing down, and commodities are working their way lower. There's no magic to this. That's why commodity prices are under the pressure that they're under right now. That's the story. And they have been a big driver of global growth. They've got this huge infrastructure boom. So you had a lot of demand for a lot of those commodities. And guess what? That has slowed. So that's what slowed commodity prices. Simple as that. And, you know, we can paint this strong dollar story. That's kind of where it started in crude. This Iranian agreement is certainly going to put a little more pressure on it. But, hey, if you increase global growth, oddly, commodity prices seem to go up.
So, you know, John Malden has been talking about a liquidity trap where there's so much money that they've printed that it actually causes deflation instead of inflation. You sort of referenced that earlier. Do you agree with this?
Yeah, but a big part of what John Malden's talking about is he's talking about a deleveraging. So he's talking about the deleveraging and deflation. So I went to John's Super Bowl party here in Dallas.
Okay.
And we talked a little bit, and he's a very gracious host, and I couldn't thank him enough for having me. But a lot of what I've read and a lot of what he's written, it sure seems like that what he is targeting, the deflationary fears, is coming from deleveraging. So you're getting, as you get this deleveraging, but what's odd is is that, yes, it does seem like some of the sector, the private sector and this and that, may be under some deleveraging, but guess what? You're increasing leverage at every central bank around the world. The biggest and worst culprit is not the Fed, it's not the ECB, it's actually the People's Bank of China. People's Bank of China, holy moly, has their balance sheet just gone bananas. So there's another a big prominent commentator by the name of Peter Schiff that I'm sure you've talked about on your show. And Peter is just a screaming China bull. He's also talking about how the yuan has the potential of rallying. And he and I couldn't be on more opposite sides of that trade. The next move for Japan will be a competitive devaluation of the yuan to try to spur exports again. That day is coming, and the conversion of the yuan to the dollar goes into the double digits when that happens. I think Peter Schiff's dead wrong. Why in the world would they want to have the yuan get firm? I don't think they're going to let that happen.
So what about the concept of China and, you know, teaming up with Russia and South Africa and, you know, now trying to get away from the Americanization of the economic system? Do you think that could have a problem for the dollar?
They sell their goods and services to us. How in the world does that help them? To try to take away that, you know, the reserve currency status of the dollar, that just sells newsletters.
Yeah.
The Chinese want to sell us stuff. Because you know what the Chinese have that we can use? The Chinese have very inexpensive labor. And guess what? The Chinese government, their goal is to keep from getting overthrown. How do you keep from getting overthrown? Make sure nobody's hungry. If you start letting those people go out of work and they start getting hungry, now all of a sudden the whole social contract in China comes under pressure. They're not going to let that happen. Their job is to stay in office, very much like our own politicians. theirs is a little bit different. And so they will do whatever they can in order to hold that power and not have the people revolt. The only way they revolt is if they're hungry. Happens over and over and over again.
Now, you do a blog, right?
I own the website Short Japan Debt. And in Short Japan Debt, I have some of my own original writings in there. I also have some newsletter articles that come out if somebody else writes something. But believe it or not, the subject matter is not necessarily about Japan, because as I think I've proven in this interview, is that the same mistakes that Japan is making, you can take those and you can extrapolate them out through Europe and the United States and China, et cetera, et cetera. So the tone of that newsletter and the tone of that blog is more the global scope and not just Japan. So it's still worth reading, even though you're not sure if you get.
So let's talk about the United States. You know, with Japan, you know, they do have a ridiculous debt to GDP ratio, but the United States, you know, we're at what? You know, it depends on how you measure it. Whether you include what we owe Social Security and the central banks and so forth, we're either at 110% or we're at 75%. We're somewhere in there.
And if you start throwing Social Security into that number, then it turns into many multiples of GDP. You know, what sickens me is the best way to help the debt to GDP ratio is to improve GDP.
Sure.
So why aren't we doing things that encourage growth?
Well, the great thing about Dodd-Frank didn't improve growth in the country. The ACA didn't improve growth.
Not in the slightest.
Come on.
I can fix Obamacare, too. If you want to have me back on, I'll tell you in 5 minutes how to fix Obamacare. It's not all that hard.
I would agree with you.
As far as the United States goes, we have 50 laboratories. Why can't we look and say, in Ohio, they cut taxes, and they deregulated a lot of things, and suddenly their GDP is growing and unemployment's dropping. Wow, that seems to be working. Look at Texas. Since 2009, out of every three jobs created in the United States was created in the state of Texas. Wow, why don't we figure out what they're doing, apart from producing a governor with a great hairdo? But let's look at them and say, wow, what are they doing? Why don't we do it on a national level? Or we could look at Illinois.
Sure.
Who raises taxes? Yep. Because the notion of cutting government spending is just not even, that's a non-starter. Because once you ring a bell, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, whatever metaphor you choose to use here. But once you start down that spending track, backing away from that is virtually impossible, because then the people who are the beneficiaries of that spending say, hey, you can't take that away from me. So why can't we look state by state and say, wow, this is working. They've got low taxes. and they've got a deregulated environment, and suddenly they've got lots of people getting jobs. God, that sounds great. Why don't we apply that on a federal level?
Well, we could always go. We could always go back to the founding fathers' concept, where we had a relatively simple federal government, and you had competition among state governments, so that you know you would see who's doing the good things, and you'd leave the states that are hurting you. You know, nowadays
Absolutely.
We have so much power in the central government; it's hard to ever get back there again.
Central government, central bank, central a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, I understand.
And how many times do we have to prove to ourselves that that model doesn't work?
No, I understand. I understand. We're in the People's Republic of Maryland, so, you know, you got to understand. We understand this better than anyone, Trey.
My knowledge of Maryland, I'd say, is pretty limited, other than crab cakes, right?
Let me tell you something. Maryland is the greatest geographic state in the entire country. It is a wonderful state. We got the Chesapeake Bay. We've got the ocean. We've got the mountains. We're right near Washington, D.C. We're not far from New York. I mean, it's an incredible state, except we have politicians living in and running this state. And they're not politicians that normally think about what they're doing.
We've had one-party state rule forever.
Forever, right, forever and ever. And now we got a, you know,
so the budget keeps going.
Like Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is, except we have a couple guys who are coming in trying to turn things around.
Yeah, we finally got a governor in who's trying to turn things around. So, Trey, the website is shortjapandebt.com. Did I say that right?
And guess what? My email address is Trey, T-R-E-S, at shortjapandebt.com. That is the same email address my mom has. So I'm a reachable guy. I can expand on some of these ideas. I can expand on some of these topics, you know, talk about specific strategies, specific things. If your listeners want to send me an email, feel free to. I can slot some time and try to chat with some of them. Clearly, we've only just scratched the surface of some of my thesis and some of my hypothesis, mind you, and I'd be happy to explain more about some of the instruments and things that we've talked about. But we're in exciting times, and I think that a lot of investors had become very complacent. Oh, well, bond market's never going to go down, and the stock market's going to keep going up because the Fed's going to keep printing money. And to some degree, that they are correct. But right now, I think we need to be more and more careful. And the closer we get to October, I think you need – right now, we're in the third year of a political cycle, of a presidential cycle. So I want to start feathering out of things and reducing exposure by October of this year.
Trey? I'm out of time.
That's the last word.
Time flies fast when we're having a good interview, and this was a great one. So I really appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, well,
thank you very much.
We hope to have you back sometime soon because it was a great talk. Anyway, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.